I have with me a real man. A real man. Alan West is here. And over the years of knowing Alan West and watching him at work and doing what he does, he's an example of what we all should become. Alan West is a former U.S. representative from Florida. He's a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel and candidate. This is the really good news. Candidate for state chair of the Republican Party of Texas and the author of the recent book, Hold Texas, Hold the Nation. I'm so glad about this because I know that the liberals are trying to turn Texas, Alabama, and all those states blue. And I'm very concerned about that because we can no longer run. At some point, we got to stand up and fight. Alan West, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
It's good to be with you, Jesse Lee, and God's blessings.
Thank you, buddy. And I have to say congratulations to the bull, and thank you for running there in Texas. That is absolutely amazing because the Republican Party really need conservative Christian men and women to stand up. Do you see Texas going blue, or what do you think going to happen?
Well, Jesse, when you look at what happened in the last election, November 2018, we lost 12 state House seats here in Texas. And then we lost another two or three state Senate seats. We lost a couple of U.S. congressional members. But most importantly, we lost 56 judgeships across the state of Texas. As a matter of fact, in Houston, Harris County, every single Republican office holder pretty much was defeated. And so what is happening here in Texas is the exact same thing that the progressive socialist left has done in many other red states. They come in, they take over the urban population centers. Here in Texas, you will find Dallas, Austin, San Antonio, Houston, El Paso, Corpus Christi, all being run by the Democrats, the left. And so when they take over these major population centers, then they are able to do what they have done in Nevada, in Arizona, in Colorado, in New Mexico, in Oregon, in Washington State, in Virginia. And they just by simple numbers, they take over the state. And what's so interesting, Jesse, is that here in Texas, when you see the incredible amount of economic growth and opportunity and prosperity, the 11th largest economy in the world is the state of Texas. People are moving here for all of the great opportunities. The book that I wrote talks about why people are fleeing California, Illinois, New York, and New Jersey to come to places like Texas. But then, you know, it's kind of like the Lot effect. You know, when God told Lot and his family one thing when they were fleeing Sodom and Gomorrah, he said, don't look back. Yeah. Well, we have people that are still looking back and bringing these failed policies to these successful states, and that's what we must stop here in Texas.
So the technique of the liberals is what, and why is it that the conservatives, they're in Texas? Because you're right, a lot of them left California to go to Texas. A lot of my friends went to Texas, and they're looking for a conservative state. They're looking for opportunity. What is the technique of the left, and why can't the Republicans see that so they can head it off, prevent it from happening?
Well, I think one of the most important things, Jesse, is that Republicans kind of gave up on the urban centers, the inner cities. But that, is, you know, President Trump kind of stumbled upon it in Baltimore. Yeah. That's where you see the greatest amount of failure for the left. And so why is it that we don't go into these minority communities who are really conservative in nature? I mean, the most conservative people in America are the folks that are in churches, Black, Hispanic, what have you. But yet, for some odd reason, we are not engaging with them. I hate the word outreach. We have to engage with them. We have to talk about policy inclusiveness. And one of the fantastic things that, you know, I share with people here in Texas that many Republicans did not know was that on American Independence Day in 1867, the Republican Party of Texas was founded by 150 blacks. Now, that's a powerful statement.
That is.
That the largest red state in the United States of America, the Republican Party, was founded by blacks in that state. And one of its early chairmen was a black man by the name of Norris Wright Cooney. So at the time when the Republican Party of Texas was being founded by blacks, the Democrat Party was creating the Ku Klux Klan. And yeah. that is an incredible, you know, juxtaposition, you know, that we should be able to bring out, especially when the left is always talking about who are the real racists and white nationalists and white supremacists.
Yeah. I remember when President Bush ran for president and Bill Clinton would go into the black communities, into the urban areas and talk to the people, right? And in that way, he showed a false sense of caring about them and getting them involved. And I tried to encourage President Bush to do the same thing, that they need to go into the communities and talk to the blacks. And if the blacks are angry or whatever because they have not showed up in a long time, allow that to happen, answer the questions, and then you finally have a breakthrough. Is it, are they afraid of the blacks? What is it that keep them up until this president? What is it that have kept Republican candidates from going into the community and dealing with the people?
I think it's a quitter's attitude and also the fact that you have many Republicans that don't know their own history.
Yeah.
And so, excuse me. And so you go back and you think about most blacks were Republicans up until one point. It was the election between Richard Nixon and John F. Kennedy. And, you know, they asked Richard Nixon to go and give Coretta Scott King a call because her husband, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., had been in prison in Birmingham. And Richard Nixon refused to do so. So he just quit. He just gave up. But yet the rumor got out that John F. Kennedy called Coretta Scott King. And guess what you saw in every living room down south in a black home? You saw a picture of Jesus. You saw a picture of Martin Luther King Jr. You saw a picture of John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
Then, of course, you had Lyndon Johnson came along with the Civil Rights legislation. But truthfully, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 would not have passed if it weren't for Senate Republicans led by Everett Dirksen. But yet we have Republicans that don't tell that history. The fact that the first members, black members of the House and the Senate, they were Republicans. They weren't Democrats. When people talk about Jim Crow and all of these things, those were the creations of the Democrat Party. So I think that the Republican Party quit on the black community and minority communities. And then the other thing is that they don't know their own history.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, they are afraid to profess the incredible history. The Republican Party in 1854 was established for one reason. That was to end slavery. The Democrat Party never supported the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, which were so important in ending slavery, giving blacks the voting rights, and giving us equal protection under the law. That tells me all I need to know because
right.
it continues on to today.
When I was growing up, I grew up in Alabama on a plantation under the Jim Crow laws. And while growing up, I didn't know any black Democrats. Mm-hmm. I only knew black Republicans. The older people were Republicans. And but something happened along the way. And I think you just explained a little bit more for me. And when the Civil Rights Movement started, Martin Luther King and those guys were Republican. Mm-hmm. But looked like they made some type of a deal. I'm not sure. But when Lyndon B. Johnson offered to give black people welfare and that kind of stuff and said the man cannot be in the home.
Yeah.
But it looked like a deal was made that Martin Luther King and those guys should become Democrats in order for that deal to be made. So at that point, it seemed as though Martin Luther King and Jesse Jackson, all those guys became Democrats. And then that's when, and because they had an influence over black people and their mindset, it looked like that's when blacks switched over and became Democrats.
No, you're absolutely right. And let's be very honest, it was President Lyndon Baines Johnson of Texas who unleashed the FBI, by the way of Herbert Hoover, to conduct surveillance and spying on Dr. King. So I'm quite sure that some of the information they gathered was leveraged against Dr. King. But you're right. What you have seen happen since the Great Society programs of Lyndon Johnson was that all of a sudden a very strong and proud community, the black community, was turned from victors into victims.
Yeah.
And we see that continuing on today. You know, when I was born in 1961, the two-parent household in the black community was between 75 and 77%. And, Jesse, you know what it is today, 24, 25%. all tied back to the policies of Lyndon Johnson and the Great Society. So when you look at Baltimore, when you look at Detroit, look at Chicago, no one talks about the deaths and the shootings and the killings that happen every single weekend in Chicago. These are all places that are controlled by the progressive socialist left. And it's the exact same thing that you see happening here. When you go down to the capital of the state of Texas, which is Austin, Austin, Texas looks more like San Francisco than it does the capital of the Lone Star State.
Amazing. You know, one last thing about that, I noticed that the young blacks and young whites too, millennials and Zs, they don't know about the history that you just mentioned, that at one point, black people, for the most part, were noble people. They got married. They were not Democrats. They were Republicans. They owned land and they worked hard.
Owned businesses.
Because my family member, they owned land, they owned businesses, they did their thing. But the black liberals and the white liberals, the public schools, have not told them that aspect of black people. So when I mention it, and when you mention it, it almost seemed to them that it's made up because they never heard that before. All they know is slavery and Jim Crow and black people hanging. They don't know the real deal.
Well, it's amazing because you think about Juneteenth. Juneteenth is a pretty big deal here in Texas, June the 19th, because that's the day when the slaves here in Texas finally found out after some time that the Civil War was over and they were actually free. So Juneteenth is supposed to be a celebration of emancipation, of freedom, of liberty, of individual triumph. But yet you had Sheila Jackson Lee, who is a representative, congressional representative from down in Houston, Texas area, leading the charge in the House of Democrats on Juneteenth. We're having a hearing on reparations. Now, here we have the Democrat Party still trying to get black people to have a slave mentality instead of us trying to understand that we can be economically emancipated.
Yeah.
You think about, you know, Madam C.J. Walker, first black female millionaire, long before Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah.
You think about, you know, Little Black Wall Street, you know, Auburn Avenue, where I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia. All of these incredible successes that came in the black community under the dark specter of segregation. But now, all of a sudden, you look at our inner cities. Like I said, you look at Baltimore. Where are the black small-owned businesses, and where's entrepreneurship? You look at D.C. and the failure of the school system there. And again, Barack Obama was the guy that canceled the D.C. school voucher program.
Yeah.
So, you know, coming back to the Republican Party, this is a great opportunity for us to talk about those policies that can restore the black family, that can restore quality education in our inner city communities, that can, you know, as President Trump has done, the economic opportunity zones, getting business, entrepreneurship, and opportunity back into our urban centers and inner cities, and flush out the gangs, flush out all this horrific thing that we see. It's a genocide that is going on in the black community today. And the people that have their hands, you know, red with the blood of the black community, it's the Democrat Party.
Yeah. I had an aunt who lived in Alabama on the plantation there. She and her husband got married. They had like 15 or 16 kids. They bought land. And all 15 or 16, maybe more, they all graduated high school. They all went to college. And they're doing very well now. They own businesses, they're professionals, and they're doing really well. And even that happened under the Jim Crow, but you don't hear those type of stories. I want to ask you, in Texas, how much of an impact are the illegal aliens having on Texas as far as turning it blue?
It has a huge impact. And this is what I think the grand strategic plan of the left is. Right now, you have Eric Holder, who is in charge of the National Democratic Redistricting Program. And that redistricting, after the census, you know, 2021 will happen. So what the Democrats don't want, and they said so, they don't want a citizenship question to be on the census. And so when you have all of these illegal immigrants that are coming across, quote unquote, family units that are being released into our cities and our population, they will be counted in the census. And they will be counted in a way that will be advantageous to the Democrats so that here in Texas, without a doubt, with the large growth of population, you will see us pick up 2 to 3 more congressional districts, without a doubt, bringing it up to 40 to 41 electoral votes. But those congressional districts are probably going to go toward the Democrats because of where the urban centers, the population centers, they'll be located. So what you see happening, Jesse, is a strategic plan to flood this country with individuals that are here illegally, have them counted in the census, especially in red states. Remember when President Trump said we should take all these illegals and send them to sanctuary cities, the sanctuary states, and the left went apoplectic? Because they don't want them to go to places that they already control. They want them to flip the balance of power in places like Texas and like Alabama or even Georgia, where I was born and raised.
Amazing. Well, I really hope and believe that you will win. And whatever we can do on our end to help you, you let us know. Today, I mean, this month is Men's History Month. August is Men's History Month, and this is our second year of celebrating men in history. What do you think of the state of men today?
Well, you know, I will take you back to a quote. I had a great old Southern mom, Elizabeth Thomas West. Her nickname was Snooks. And she told me and taught me that a man must stand for something or else he'll fall for anything. Yeah. And I think that you're starting to see a resurgence of manliness and godly manliness in the United States of America. And that really concerns the left because you hear them talk about toxic masculinity. They don't want men to be strong. They don't want men to truly be men. And I'm not talking about bully type of guys. I'm talking about chivalry. I'm talking about honor. I'm talking about integrity. I'm talking about character. I'm talking about stand-up kind of guys, not the kind of guys that take a knee on the flag of the United States of America. Yeah. So I do see that resurgence, and you know, you are leading the charge on that. And that's, I think, one of the most important things in our Black community is to get men once again to stand up, because that was the strength of our community. You know, men that you could look to be role models and examples, because that's what made me what I am today. A strong father who served in World War II, a godfather who was a Tuskegee Airman, an older brother who served two tours of duty in Vietnam as a United States Marine, and a father-in-law who served two tours of duty in the United States Army in Vietnam. And he's buried at Arlington National Cemetery, and my father's buried at Marietta National Cemetery. That's what made me the man that I am today, is having those strong principal role models in my life.
When I was growing up, I saw and I was taught the order of God, God in Christ, Christ in man, man over woman, woman over children. And that spiritual order worked during those days. Mm-hmm. And the liberals, they decided, well, you know what? We can't have this order. So they took the men out of the home, especially the Black community. They took God out of the public square, out of the public schools. And they brought in all these just crazy ideas, perverted ideas. And they really corrupt the mind of a lot of men. And young men and young women. And so it's now our duty to remind them of those values, of those Ten Commandments or whatever, right, that leads for a good life. And we have to follow the order of God in order for that to work. It's not a challenge between men and women. No. It's just a spiritual order of God. And that order works. And when you deviate from that order, your personal life or even your public life will be screwed up.
Now, you're absolutely right. And when I think about my relationship with my wife, without a doubt, she's a genius. And she has much more intellectual capability than I am. She has a bachelor's in marketing and finance, an MBA, and a PhD. I was lucky to get a bachelor's degree and two master's degrees. But the thing is that we complement each other. We understand our roles and responsibilities. Yes. And, you know, we have two very strong, well-educated, successful daughters. And I think that's what we want to have, is that teammate concept and understanding, you know, our respective lanes. And there are things that my wife brings to the table and there are things that I bring to the table. But when we work together and jointly, we have success. 1 + 1 = 2. And so I think that what the progressive socialist left has done is to try to break down all of these things through secular humanism and also making us believe that they're the ones that grant us our rights and freedoms, and that we cannot have a spiritual connection with our Heavenly Father from whence our inalienable rights come from. And again, when we talk about how we can better connect with our minority communities, Hispanic communities, Black communities, it has to be about faith. It has to be about family. It has to be about individual responsibility and quality education. And, you know, again, coming back to what I started out talking about, is how do we make more victors in America and reduce the amount of victims, because the left wants victims. And that's the only way they can be in existence.
I can honestly tell you that I've been doing this work of rebuilding a family by rebuilding a man for the last 29 years. Mm-hmm. And it's overwhelming. I am counseling and dealing with young men and women from around the world, because once they hear about these values that they never heard of, they began to examine their lives and they started to change for the good. And it's definitely needed. I want to ask two questions about the military. Then I want you to give out your book and tell us how we can help you. Sure. Number one, do you think most men can handle the military today?
I tell you what, I just spent this past weekend at the 74th anniversary of the 101st Airborne Division. And, you know, I had the great opportunity to be with some World War II paratroopers that jumped into Normandy with their Bastogne. I tell you what, we still have some great young men and women that are serving in our United States military. But sometimes I ask, if we were to send out a call for young men to storm the beaches like they did of Normandy, whether or not we'd be able to fill the ranks with, you know, the right and proper young men. Too many of our young men are out there wondering where they're going to get their next cafe latte from.
That's right. When I become president, one thing I'm going to do is have mandatory military service. That
See, then I got to disagree.
Okay, that's what I want to ask, because I'm thinking that since these men are not getting the right type of training at home, and that they are latte, many are into the latte thing, the military will not only train you self-discipline, but it will also teach you about the country. And that will cause you to appreciate America, as they do in Israel, by the way. It will cause you to appreciate America even more so. Then you can stand up for the country, because we were taught that growing up, but these young men and women are not being taught that while growing up. That's the reason I wanted mandatory military service for a few years. What do you think?
Well, I will tell you, having been a commander in the military as a captain and also a lieutenant colonel, the last thing I want to do is to have to spend, you know, 95% of my time with 5% of soldiers that don't want to be there. I think that it is a privilege to serve our country in uniform as a soldier, sailor, airman, marine, and Coast Guardsman, and that's how we have to look at it. We have to keep our standards high. But what you're talking about is some type of national service, and I truly believe that that should happen. But there are many different ways that our young people can get out and serve our community, serve this great nation, instead of being on the front lines as guardians of the Republic. And one of the things that made a difference in my life, Jesse, was the high school junior ROTC program. It's not about training up young people to go into the military. It's about teaching them responsibility, leadership, and about service to something greater than themselves. And so I am a firm proponent of the high school junior ROTC programs that have Army, Marine Corps, Air Force, and also Navy programs. And it does a great job. I sponsor an award scholarship program here for the Dallas Independent School District, and I would ask more people to get involved with their local junior ROTC programs.
When I turned 18, because the men before me had gone to the military, they were happy to go, they were looking forward to going, right?
Yeah.
So when I turned 18, the first thing I did was I went down and registered for the military, because at 18 that time you could get in. But because I had a cleft palate, hair lip, they didn't take me in. But there was a time when it was, as you have done, it was an honor to serve in the military. You look forward to it. And that's what I would like to see again. Alan, tell the folks how to get your recent book, Hold Texas, Hold the Nation.
Yes, you can get Hold Texas, Hold the Nation, Victory or Death through Amazon.com. And then also follow our campaign for the chairmanship of the Republican Party of Texas at West4Texas.com. That's West4Texas.com. And you can follow me every day on TheOldSchoolPatriot.com. I'm also on Twitter and Facebook and also Instagram.
Amazing. And so the help you need from us at this point is?
Well, your financial contributions are always appreciated, but your prayers most especially than anything else. And I'd love to have your endorsement, Pastor Jesse.
Right on. Well, I'll do that. You definitely have it. I think Texas is fortunate and blessed to have a man like you. And so you definitely have that. Anytime you need help or you want to promote something, let us know. You can come here anytime you want to.
And thanks for having me on your show. That's a real honor.
Right on. And I wish you well. And let us know. We'll keep up with you, but let us know how it turns out. Allen West, former U.S. representative for Florida, from Florida, and he's running for state chair of the Republican Party of Texas. I wish you well. We'll be talking soon.
Thanks, sir. All right. All the best.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Absolutely amazing, folks.